Welcome to another edition of the Superflight NBA Show, your Ai Weiwei of NBA shows, because you shouldn't be jailed for your thoughts. That's all I'm saying. What's up, everybody? Today is Sunday, May 21st, and it's a beautiful day in New York, and I'm your host, Joe Borelli, coming at you from a studio in Brooklyn. You can get in touch with the show in a number of ways. You can follow along on Dash Satellite Radio every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific or 6 p.m. Eastern. I believe that's how it works. It's hard to go backwards in time for me. Forward. I don't know. I've only ever lived on the East Coast. This is weird for me. Anyway, you can follow the show on Twitter at SuperflightPod. You can follow me personally at Joe Borelli. You can email the show at thesuperflightpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow along at the Almighty Baller Radio Network. You can Google the show and find it that way. Wait, does that make any sense? You can listen on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and let's see, if you listen, rate, and review, and then, it'll help other people find the show. Anyway, so I recorded the show Friday night with Damon Rangulo because that's the only time he had free, and that's the only time I had free. And we really wanted to talk about the NBA draft lottery and the implications of the all-NBA teams. So we did that, and we're not talking much about the playoffs because, well, you know, the East and West finals are just kind of lame. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion that the Cavs and the Warriors are going to meet in the finals. So let's just speed up, as everyone's saying. Let's fast forward to that. I don't really feel like talking about anything else, except maybe the whole net neutrality thing that our wonderful government, because of our dumbass president, is trying to take away again. Or they're trying to take away net neutrality. They're trying to put restrictions on our internet streaming. They're trying to slow down our speeds and make us pay for faster speeds, which means that podcasts like this one, who don't make any money on their podcasts, they're just doing it because they like to talk, and like to connect with people. It means that you will not have this podcast anymore because I cannot afford to do this on my own. It means that the wonderful golden age of television that we're in right now, with awesome streaming from Netflix and from HBO and all the shows we enjoy, you won't be able to get them because you'll have to pay an exorbitant amount of money. It puts the power back in the hands of the cable companies, and it's going to screw all of us. We're going to have less. But essentially what it does is limits our freedom of speech. It limits the ability we have to put things out there like this and to connect with other people via internet, and have our opinions heard and have dialogues that are intelligent, unless we're being backed by somebody, unless we're having money pour in. And it's basically just going to be the way of this. Also, by the way, limits bands that you might like that really a lot of people don't know about because they can afford to put their stuff on places like SoundCloud for free, almost not free, but if they reduce net neutrality, if they take away net neutrality, you're not going to have any of that stuff anymore. So we all need to pay attention and we need to stand up and fight for our rights. It shouldn't be a money-making thing. These MFers should not be able to restrict our ability to find information on the internet or listen to music or watch movies or watch TV or do whatever we want. They don't realize that like keeping the masses happy, it will keep them from being thrown out of their seats. It will keep us from revolting, which ultimately will happen if you keep like voting stupid people like Trump and all. Anyway, I'm getting way ahead of myself. This all becomes a big giant thing in my head. Anyway, net neutrality, it's a big issue. It's a really important issue. If you guys want the podcast that you love to stay around, I mean, yeah, the internet is saturated with bands that nobody will ever hear and with podcasts that nobody will ever hear. And with really, I don't even know how they're making some of these movies right now. They're so freaking awful, but there's a lot of stuff out there that's not for you and it's not high quality, but there is a lot of stuff out there that's really good and you'll never be able to hear it if your internet is taken away. If you have to pay like $100 a month to afford just basic. Remember the days of basic cable when basic cable cost you like $85 to $100 a month just so you could watch like ABC and CBS and I don't even think ESPN was included in that. But, you know, I mean, I probably should have somebody on here that knows about these things more than I do. Somebody way more intelligent and versed in net neutrality. I don't know why I'm talking about it. I'm just saying that like, guys and gals, stay vigilant. We need to get involved in our local politics and we need to I don't know, keep the playing field even. Keep the wealthy from owning everything and making it, and keep, you know, alert and stay involved and make sure that this land is for everyone, not just the wealthy and not just people who think that they know everything and not just the religious groups who would seek to keep women's bodies under control and who would seek to keep us all in church and keep us, you know, under their thumb by way of religion. Sorry, guys, I didn't mean to go off on this tangent, but anyway, I'm going to stop. Listen, you know, my good friend Damon Rangola is coming up, and we're going to talk about the things I mentioned, and then right after these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey guys, I'm Byron James.
And I'm Michael Keith, and we are the Fuzz NBA Podcast.
That's right, we come from the land down under. Here in Sydney, Australia, we might be 942 miles away from any actual NBA action or a violent 22-hour ride with United Airlines, but we can assure you, we spend more time watching the game, talking about the game, and analysing box scores than we do our own wives' box
scores. Oh. Plus, one time Byron shared an ice cream with Joe Ingles.
It was actually boysenberry in a tub. It was delicious.
Anyway, we hope you can join us.
We're the Fuzz NBA Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Or find us at www.thefuzznba.com.
Anyway, back to the show.
Yeah, so welcome to the show, my friend. How's things? How's your emotions these days?
I am thrilled. The NBA is making me happy. Definitely, you know, the Lakers keeping the pick was a big source of anxiety. Well, just because it was a big deal. Obviously, it's not like it was going to be the end of the world, but in terms of you want your team to grow organically, sequentially, you don't really want any stoppage in that. And them losing the pick would be
catastrophic.
Catastrophic. See, catastrophic is rough because you still have one more year of development for everybody on the team. You still have cap space. You still have options. And it's not like, you know, it's not the end of the world. You can't put too much into it because you still don't know if draft picks pan out. You don't know if draft picks stay healthy. All that stuff, right?
Yeah, but yes, listen, obviously, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll just use this as a precursor. We're going to end up talking about this tonight. But before we get to that, my friend, why don't you tell everybody how they can get a hold of you and read your stuff and follow you on Twitter?
Best thing is just to follow me on Twitter at Damanr, D-A-M-A-N-R. I write very, very sparingly, almost none at this point, just unfortunately time-bound, but I tweet plenty, so just follow me on Twitter.
Great follow on Twitter. Great, great follow. You're one of the funniest people on Twitter that I know.
I appreciate that, man.
Also, when the Lakers keep their pick, you're a little bit annoying, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, yeah, of course. I have to play my role.
Yes, you do, and you do it well. It's fine. I took it in stride, although, listen, I'm a Sixers fan, so I was a little bit... I wasn't mad at you. I didn't really care if they... All right, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. In the meantime, let's talk about some... the NBA... All-NBA teams. How's that? The All-NBA teams.
Yes.
I need to pull this up quick, because I rushed to do this right now, tonight, and I didn't have time to get anything together, because, you know, just got done eating dinner with my wife, and... Anyway, speak a little bit. So I fill some space here, and I'll look this up real quick.
Well, I think the gist of it is that the voters did a really, really good job. I think that this is obviously one of the tougher votes because the league is stacked talent-wise. If you go back, like, you know, 10 years.
That's absolutely true, by the way. It must have been really hard. Really stacked.
Yeah, and it's if you go back 10 years and you see some of the players that make their team, and you really can see the difference between the level of talent in the league right now, and that includes both veteran and young talent. And if you compare it, you know, there's just no comparison. Teams are deeper. Teams are playing a better style. Coaching is better. Management of teams is better. It's just all around. It's such a good product. And isolating the top 15 players in the league, not only by just like the top 15, but by position, is a insanely difficult task. And I got to hand it to them. They've done a very good job. And just today they also announced, like, you know, finalists for the awards like MVP and all that. And look, the voters, it's a tough job to get, you know, rank this kind of talent, basically. And I think that I'm very impressed by the outcomes.
Totally. So, excuse me. If there was anybody that got left off, do you think there's any snubs? Well, who are the snubs for you? Or do you think they just straight down the line did a great job? Because there are, again, as you mentioned, there's so many good players in the league right now. I would have a hard time doing this if I was like, who gets to vote on these things? National writers? And
Yeah. So I think there's 100 writers for the All-NBA team. I think, you know, so there's always going to be, especially at the like fringes. So, for example, DeAndre Jordan made the third team. Some people would want Karl Anthony Towns in there, right? That's a option, and it's a good option.
Right.
Some people were saying that instead of DeMar DeRozan, maybe it should have been Chris Paul. But the truth is we also, like, you know, the way DeMar's season ended in the playoffs, you know, it was not great. We tend to weigh that, and that's kind of the downfall of these awards, you know, coming at playoff time, because it's hard to separate the playoff performances and the regular season performances. DeMar DeRozan weathered the storm for a Raptors team that lost Kyle Lowry for a significant portion of the season. He played extremely well, really efficient basketball. And, you know, Chris Paul was out, and Chris Paul also, the Clippers were relatively disappointing in the regular season and the playoffs, of course. And so from that perspective, I think that obviously you can make cases. Obviously, when we're ranking the 15th best players, there's going to be somebody in the top 20 that you feel like, you know, should have been in there. That's of course that will always be there. But if the final list that came out, I have no issues with it. There's nobody who doesn't deserve it that's on it, I think, is the better way to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And you know, the first thing, like, I'm sorry, I'm a little bit underprepared for this because I, again, like as you did, just get out of work and come home. I don't have any time to look at this stuff while I'm at work. So I went right from work to home to like real life chores and then to here. So excuse my unpreparedness. But yeah, the one thing that jumped out at me immediately when I saw the tweet was that, you know, we are definitely weighting these picks based on their playoff performance. So the first one that jumped out to me was, as you mentioned, DeMar DeRozan. I'm like, well, I mean, for me, I wouldn't have put him on even based on his regular season stats, because I just think that he was good. He was really good. He put up really good numbers. I'm just not a huge fan of his game. And I would have definitely put Chris Paul above him. For me, that makes, you know, that's like a no-brainer. Like, how do you leave Chris Paul off of this list? But I understand Chris Paul's, as you just mentioned, the Clippers didn't do that well. And they flamed out really quick in the playoffs. And that's the thing. Like, when we see these, and you mentioned, we see them at playoff time, it colors what you think about these teams. Like DeAndre Jordan, of course, he could have been replaced by Karl Anthony Towns. And honestly, that's, you know, this one I don't fault the voters for. I think they did a really good job. Karl Anthony Towns has had a great season. But again, like there's such a close space between this guy and that guy. There's so small of a difference. The discrepancy between them is so close to that. Like, what do you do? It's got to come down, I guess, for some people to your record. A lot of people,
right? Like, and I think that's fair, by the way.
And it is totally fair. And you have to have, you have to draw the line somewhere, right? If all things are equal, then it comes down to, like, well, you know, the tiniest of little details. And if the record is the thing for you, then that's fine. I'm totally fine with DeAndre Jordan getting in. I'm totally good with the list for the most part. I mean, I'm totally good with the list. I don't really think I would have changed much, if anything at all, but. The one thing is, and this strikes me, is that the guys that vote on these lists actually have the power to determine the player's outcome in certain cases, like Paul George or Gordon Hayward. And, you know, because they didn't, either one of those guys didn't make an All-NBA team, they're not eligible for the Supermax, right? Which means they just cut their paycheck. To me, it seems like a ridiculously arbitrary and antiquated system. I don't know how this began, but to leave the salary up to people who are not even involved with the team. And I'm not saying like the writers, it's not their fault. They have to vote their conscience and vote who they think is, you know, who is the best and who should be the top 15 players. And as you mentioned, I think they did a great job. But putting that in their hands, it's just a really bad system by the NBA, not by the writers. You know, it's just, it seems really flawed. What do you think about it?
And I think you nailed it at the end there, is that it's not the writers. I mean, they probably hate this responsibility because you don't want to feel like you're responsible for taking, you know, $30 million out of Paul George's pocket. The truth is that this is just another case of the owners trying to happen because of the new CBA extension that they negotiated. This is all part of their effort to, you know, keep their own players, make it so, you know, restrict player movement as much as possible, which is already ridiculous because the team you get drafted to, you're basically stuck with for like 9 years as it is. And all of these misguided attempts, like forever, have backfired. The super team that Miami put together was as a result of a bad CBA changes that they made. Warriors, you know, the Warriors being like super team created was such a freak set of circumstances. Like, if you list the ways that it happened, this is just another misguided attempt at owners trying to regulate sort of parity, competitive balance, and all that stuff. And this new, you know, designated veteran players extension clause that we're talking about was all because of essentially the Warriors getting together. But my point to you was that overreacting to the Warriors super team is such a mistake because of the freak set of circumstances that had to happen for the Warriors to even get Kevin Durant, right? That included like a crazy cap spike.
For sure.
A crazy, them, first of all, beating OKC after being up 3-1 and then losing to the Cavs being up 3-1. Like, all of those things had to happen together at the same time. And the Warriors had to be such a great organization and had to clear so much salary. Like, such a wide array of factors.
Don't forget also that if it wasn't for Steph Curry being injured his first 3 years in the league, they wouldn't have him on this contract. They wouldn't be able to make any of these moves. They got him on such a sweet deal because of those injuries. And who knew that, like, I remember his rookie season, and I think we all have the same thought that, my God, if this kid can stay healthy, he's going to be insanely good. And then the next 2 years, he just had ankle injuries. And you're like, well, this is never going to happen. He's never going to pan out. And I'm hoping that Joel Embiid follows sort of the same path.
Right. No. And he's the same way, right? If he's healthy, we all know what he can be.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's like it's a perfect storm of things that happened for the Warriors to be here. And because they tried to correct what they thought were inequities or inefficiencies in the CBA last time, the things that would give them a competitive edge, I guess, they tried to correct it, but they overcorrected. It's like when you're driving a car and you start to hydroplane and you steer too far to one way. That's exactly what happened here, I think.
That's a really, really good comparison. Yeah, I agree. I completely agree with that.
And enabled them to get, they were trying exactly to keep super teams from building. You're right. And what they did instead was they enabled Kevin Durant to come to the Warriors.
Right. So you know, it's part of a bigger conversation, not so much that the voters you know, that they have this power, and essentially this clause is going to make it more likely than less that, you know, players start moving away from their teams. So the writers did a really, really good job. This system is going to bite the owners in the ass, just like so many other kind of provisions like this have done. So
are you there? I think I lost you again.
Oh boy.
We're not batting 1,000 tonight, are we?
Yeah, wait, what about now? Hello?
Yeah, yep, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Maybe I should just call you and we'll just record it on a cell phone.
No, let's see.
Yeah. No, that's a joke. That's a joke, man.
Oh. Okay.
I thought you got my humor. Anyway, yeah, well, what do you think about... So what do you think? Is there a possibility that, like, Paul George now gets moved to, say, I don't know, the Lakers? Or that Gordon Hayward, because he's not going to be eligible for that Supermax, leaves the Jazz? I mean, what do you think? Does this open up? I mean, I personally think it opens up other possibilities. It opens up, I mean, honestly, I have the feeling that Hayward stays. I think he really enjoys it there, and I think he's already a hero, like a hero in Utah. I don't know why he would leave, except for, you know, if he wanted to chase a championship. But I think if he
it's not even chasing a championship though, right? For Gordon Hayward, because right. of his connection with Brad Stevens in Boston. I mean, if he leaves Utah, it will be for Boston. And if you look at Boston, I mean, look, I'm a Lakers fan, so obviously it's fun to make fun of them. But at the same time, and by the way, they're getting their butts kicked by, I know this is going to be recording later, but they're getting their butts kicked by Cleveland right now.
Yeah, what's the score? Last I saw, I just got to watch like 5 minutes of it. It was
it's crazy. It's like 56-24. It's ridiculous. Sorry. It's fun to make fun of, right?
Yeah.
But truth is that they have a crazy amount of assets. They have a lot of young talent. They have a really good coach. They have a good organization. They have a good fan base. They're a good market. So I would not blame him in the least, Gordon Hayward, if he went from Utah to Boston. But yeah, them not being on the All-NBA teams and eligible for this extension takes the chances of them leaving from like 5% to like 50%, right? And that's a huge, huge, huge thing.
Because what it does is ultimately it evens the playing field. It levels the playing field. Like if that one team, if your team can't give you that extra money now, then what's the difference if you're here or there? So I'm just laying it out in plain, you know, layman's terms.
Right.
Like everything's equal now just because the writers voted the way they felt that they should. And I'm not saying they're wrong. It's not on them. You know, it's on the NBA. But go on. Are you there?
Paul George to the Lakers.
Are you there?
In regards, yes.
Oh, I didn't hear you till just now. So what were you saying?
Yeah, I was saying in regards to the Paul George Lakers question, that there was already a lot of smoke, right? In regards to that, a lot of rumblings about Paul George wanting to be in LA, and not even just LA. I mean, if you look at Indiana's situation, it is quite bad. Like, I don't see how they get from where they are to even being competitive in the East. And so I don't blame Paul George at all, because this is his prime of his career. And you can't just let, you know, your prime go to waste. And I think that Paul George being traded this summer, or let's say by the next deadline, is a virtual certainty. And if he wants to be in L.A., that makes it more likely that he comes to L.A., because another team can't take the risk of acquiring Paul George and him just leaving in 1 year, because he's going to be an unrestricted free agent after next season. That's why the clock is right now. And honestly, I mean, this is if I'm Boston, I would still make the deal, especially if Jimmy Butler is not available and you don't sign Gordon Hayward. Like if Gordon Hayward decides to stay with Utah,
mm-hmm.
I would still bid for Paul George. I would still offer trades. And I would call his bluff, because with Paul George, the Celtics would probably go back at least to the conference finals. And for him to leave after that kind of a situation would be really tough. So I would still do that. But I think that Paul George leaving Indiana is a virtual certainty at this point. And I'd say the odds on favorite are definitely the Lakers.
Huh. All right. That's fair. By the way, we should also mention part of the reason he didn't make All-NBA team is probably because of the team he's on. If he had better players around him, exactly to what you were saying.
Absolutely.
He would have been on that team. He's that good of a player. He just had no help. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So it's, you know, you're, I think you're totally spot on. I think if he's not traded if he's not traded on draft night, then he's definitely out of there by the trade deadline. I can't see a world in which, and for the Pacers, they have to know this is their best chance. They have a golden chip in their hands. Paul George is an amazing player. He's a top 15, 20 player in the league. You have to unload him while you have the opportunity to do it. You have to sell high. He's like a stock. Not him personally, but the idea of him is, he's like a stock. You want to sell when it's at its highest level. And they would be fools not to do it. He's not going to come back. They're not going to be able to put a good enough team around him. I think you're totally right. I think he's gone. And Gordon Hayward, I'm still not, I have no feel about him at all, but I could totally see him moving on as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I look with Utah, the way they lost to Golden State's not going anywhere.
No.
And so anybody who has the opportunity to go East, I mean, LeBron is pretty damn unstoppable too, but at least you can, crack challenge the Cavs, but I think the chemistry.
We have a terrible feed tonight. I don't know what's going on. I'm missing every other word you're saying.
Oh man, I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault. Maybe I should restart my internet and call you right back.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Hang tight. Let me call you back.
Yeah, you gotta upgrade your internet. I find that that's a very worthwhile investment.
Yeah, well, we're all going to have to upgrade our internet as soon as they pass this net neutrality law thing.
That's true.
God. Anyway, you were talking about how Utah gets, how they got demolished by the Warriors, how they got swept.
Right.
Did you have any more to say about that?
Yeah, well, sorry.
No,
yeah.
It's okay.
I just think that if you're in the West and you're looking at the Warriors, their chemistry is just going to get better from here, which is the scariest part of this. Like, I when I watch them play and I see Steph and Kevin Durant and Draymond, they're playing obviously very, very well, and they're the overwhelming favorites to win the title this year. But I look at them and I say, you know what? Kevin Durant isn't fully integrated, and that's not anybody's fault. I mean, to integrate such a big piece like that on the fly is very difficult. Imagine them with a full year and then a summer of just, you know, working together, and then coming in next year, they're going to be even better. And so if you're Gordon Hayward, you're looking at, okay, well, Rudy Gobert is really good right now. I'm in the prime of my career, and if I sign for 5 years now, are we really going to have a shot over the next 5 years to get into the finals, where I can maybe see a situation in Boston and say, you know what, within 5 years, LeBron is far older than the core of the Warriors. Let me try this. Let me see if I can go there. And obviously, you know, there's plenty of stories about the fact that Brad Stevens was one of the only people that ever believed in Gordon Hayward going back to their Butler days. And of course, there's going to be a personal connection there. So it's more of a possibility, I think, than people think. But he very well could just stay, because obviously they have a good thing going in Utah.
Yeah, and I just to speak to that a little bit, I think it's a matter of jumping off point, right? Your Boston is jumping off at a much higher level. Even if you're going to compete with the LeBron-led Cavs and you're not going to get past them anytime soon, you're right. He's got to be on the back end of his career, right? We keep saying this, but every year in his 14th season, he's better now than he's ever been. It's insane.
It's amazing.
He's really a robot. I'm pretty sure he's a robot. he's like a predator. He's actually just, like, you know, gonna kill all of us at some point. Anyway,
it's worth mentioning again and again, because we take greatness for granted, and mm-hmm. you know, that's what's done with LeBron. He is, what he's doing is, you know, basically unparalleled.
It's incredible. Anyway, let's stop, you know, praising LeBron. We have other things to talk about, namely our respective crappy teams that just went 2-3 in the NBA draft lottery. So
yes,
we opened talking about this, and I know, because you're a big Lakers fan and I'm a big Sixers fan, you really want to get into this. Let's talk about the unless you have anything else to say. Do you have anything else to
I think I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, so first, as I wrote to you earlier, I want you to take me through what the anxiety you were feeling just before the Lakers got their pick.
To say I was stressed out is like an understatement, because obviously, you know, when we came into the year, and especially the Lakers started 10-10, I had sort of decided, you know, well, not decided, but I had come to terms with the fact that, and you know, to the credit of our fan base, it's like a lot of us had been saying all year that, look, we can't expect to keep the pick, because even with the second worst record, you have like a 55%, or roughly speaking, chance of keeping the pick. And then the Lakers were the third worst position. They were under 50%. It was like 46.9. So, I mean, you have to figure that, listen, that's basically a 50-50 shot, worse than that this year. And so more times than not, you're not going to keep it. And for the Lakers to, first of all, keep the pick was just such a moment of joy. And then to jump up from 3-2, which there's a big difference this year. I mean, I don't know enough about the draft, but at least from people, what people say is that the first two picks are almost sure things, almost. And then there's a good tier of prospects, 3-5, and then there's a big drop off, right? So 1-5 is a very solid draft this year. But just the anxiety on that day specifically was just unbelievable, because you know how big it is. You understand, it's like a theoretical thing until it's the lottery day. And when it's lottery day, then you're like, oh man, it's here. You know, this is real. This is happening today. And so it was definitely very stressful. And then what, obviously when it was announced, it was just euphoria, because it's not only the pick, it's the amount of options it unlocks. It's such a massive tool in your tool chest. And you know, it's going to be an exciting summer.
Well, I can say this as a Sixers fan, I totally know what you were going through. And you know, I wasn't as nervous this year about like not getting that pick. I said at the beginning of the year, so after we saw what Joel Embiid is and what he could possibly be if he stays healthy, like everything after that was icing on the cake. I really wanted the Sixers to get the Lakers pick just because I want to see the Lakers fail.
Of course. Very understandable.
So, no, it's fine. I mean, right? It's fine. Yeah.
No, it's truthful. It's very understandable. But the truth is the Sixers did damn well too. That night.
And here's the thing, like, you're right. There's absolutely, by the way, I'm not sold that Lonzo Ball is a sure thing. And I don't know enough about the draft yet either. I have to do some digging. I have to do my YouTube scouting later in a couple of weeks, and I'll do a podcast about that. So, yeah, I don't really know enough about him either. For me, are you pretty confident that the Lakers are going to take Lonzo Ball?
I can't put a percentage on it right now. I'd say so Fultz is the clear cut number one, right?
Yeah.
So we
that's can, what I understand anyway.
Right. So beyond that, I think that it's pretty much a consensus at this point, based off everything I've read. Now things can change. We're still a month away, from the actual draft. It seems like consensus is that Lonzo Ball is the number two prospect. But if, you know, something about Josh Jackson and you know the other prospects, if somebody else kind of steps up and looks like possibly the better prospect, I don't deny that the Lakers would go in that direction. Yeah, you know, it's unfortunately Lonzo's dad, who I actually have no problem with. I find him very funny.
Really?
You know, beyond some of his troublesome comments. Yeah, man. I mean, like, what harm is he doing other than? And ESPN and Fox Sports are, you know, giving them the platform.
It's not that he's actually doing harm. And you're right. If you're going to get a platform, use the platform. Screw it. I mean, right. Like, what is everybody doing a podcast trying to do? We're all like, oh, let me put my product out there. Let me put my brand out there. So you're right. In that sense, you are correct. The problem I have is that his son is the one that we should be focusing on, not him. It just seems incredibly selfish and sort of deviant. And by the way, seeing him on the Colin Cowherd is an idiot. I hate that guy. But seeing what he did with his co-host, I forget her name, because I've never actually listened to that show he has now. But I saw the tweets and I'm like, you know, Lonzo or LaVar sitting there and like just not even acknowledging her because he's afraid of her, quote unquote, afraid of her. It really smacks of sexism. And it's kind of gross. I just don't like what he does. I don't like the attention that he tries to grab.
Here's my question to you. And I don't deny anything you just said. If you're a GM of a team, how much does that factor into your pick?
Oh, my God. If I'm a GM of a team, it factors in a whole lot. I think, honestly, I could see Lonzo's stock dropping, seriously, because his dad is such a circus. It's going to be they not only get the player, but they get the entire circus that comes with him. And not only that, dude, that it puts an unfair amount of pressure on Lonzo to perform because he's coming in. Guys are going to hate him because of his dad. He's coming in already with a target on his back. He's already a rookie. I just feel like his dad is not doing anything to help him as a father should. I feel like the only thing he's doing is looking out for himself, and he's creating this media frenzy and circus around him that I just feel is unfair to Lonzo. I actually feel bad for Lonzo Ball, man. I think that the circus he's setting up and the pressure that he's putting on him because of the things his, you know, LaVar is saying is just totally unfair. And I just feel like it's setting him up for failure. What is your rebuttal to this? Go ahead.
My rebuttal is if you consider LaVar Ball in anything higher than 0.0% of your evaluation of Lonzo, you are not ready to be an NBA GM. Because
well, no shit, man. I'm not
play. Well, no, that's my point though.
No,
right?
I know.
It has nothing to do with anything. In fact, if you look at it from this perspective, he is at worst a top three prospect in the NBA draft on a very loaded draft. Whatever pressure that LeVar has been putting on him has served him well. Secondly, when LeVar goes out and talks about Lonzo, it's all supportive. And the sideshow and the you know bombastic nature of LeVar, that's about LeVar promoting LeVar, and who cares? Like that, this is my question keeps coming back to who cares? Like,
well, that's the thing. You're telling, and the answer is like the fans care. The fans care a lot. The fans don't want to be like,
if Lonzo is a good basketball player, are you really going to care? If the Sixers drafted him, would you really care? If Joel Embiid was, you know, was he a distraction because of his Shirley Temples? Was he actually a distraction?
No, come on.
I get what you're saying. And now we're talking about the dad. We're not even talking about the actual kid, right?
No, but you know who was a distraction? Allen Iverson's mom. Well, whatever. He was still one of the greatest players of all time.
Right. So if you're telling you're me right, Lonzo Ball's right. ceiling is Allen Iverson, yeah, I'll take that.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. Please do not quote me on that. I am not saying that in any way, shape, or form.
I'm saying if Allen Iverson is any sort of a comparison, I'll take it. You know what I mean? Even if,
only by disruptive parents.
Okay. So his disruptive parents, if that allowed him to have only that good of a career, I'll take that as well.
But you know who else found parents is a distraction? Okafor. Chucky Okafor is a huge pain in the ass. He's threatened people on Twitter, like, to kick their ass because they don't like his son. Like, it's,
and if Jahlil Okafor actually played well, nobody would care.
You're right. Right. But what I'm saying.
Draymond Green's mom does the same stuff on Twitter. Aisha Curry, Steph Curry's wife, said the NBA was rigged. Yeah, did you care?
I did just to the extent that it was hilarious.
Did it change how Steph Curry plays or how you feel about Steph Curry? No. That's what it comes down to. It's nonsense. And, you know, I can go down a sociological kind of route with this that I'll avoid. But, you know, let's not forget that Eli Manning's dad steered Eli away from the Chargers to the Giants, and nobody said anything about it. Right?
Oh, I don't know if that's true. I live in New York. It's definitely not true. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, I'm making a character. What basically we're all doing is making character judgments about Lonzo based on his idiot father, right? His idiot father is not going to be playing basketball. So I don't. If Lonzo is that good, just forget a LeVar. It could be a distraction, but, you know, ultimately, he could be one of the best players out of the draft. So I don't – if they're going to take him, that's fine. I can say that I'm pretty happy that the Sixers don't have to worry about that if the Lakers take him. That's just where I'm at. I don't want the circus sideshow. I just want, you know, really good players. But, again, as you mentioned, if he's a really good player, nobody's going to notice. So it's fine. It's fine. I would say you've swayed me, but you really haven't. I still think his dad's an ass.
I'm not even disputing that, though. We're not even talking about
that's true.
I'm talking about its effect on Lonzo, which is, if nothing, if it's not positive, even though I would argue that if it's led him to this point, it's been positive. Even if it's a net neutral, it's pointless to use any evaluation on Lonzo using LeVar as any sort of example.
But what if what I'm saying is right and his dad just derails him for his career? Then what? Now, listen, let's not talk about this. Anyway, let me ask you a few other questions about this draft pick, though. Does this mean the end for D'Lo? As so many people are predicting.
No.
Do you think they can play together?
Yeah, well, first of all, nobody close to the Lakers or has any sources with the Lakers has even come close to reporting that D'Angelo Russell is even available. Now, as it comes to development and a team building perspective, the Lakers are not in a position. They don't have, like, you know, the sure shot star, like the Karl Anthony Towns level star, to say that anybody on their roster is untouchable. And that includes the number two pick, by the way. Everything is on the table. But in regards to if the Lakers choose to draft D'Angelo Lonzo Ball, they actually complement each other very well. And Lonzo Ball, there's this guy, his name is Pete Zayas. He was an ex-coach. He breaks down film for the Lakers. And he breaks down film of the Lakers. And he also does draft prospects. And he says actually that Lonzo Ball projects very well as a player who can guard twos. D'Angelo Russell and Lonzo Ball both play well off the ball. D'Angelo Russell is actually the best catch and shoot player on the Lakers, but he's had nobody to pass him the ball in catch and shoot situations.
Right.
So in terms of them playing together, I think it could work very, very well, especially because it would put Jordan Clarkson into the sixth man role, which he should be. He should not be a starter in the NBA.
That actually brings up my next question. Do you think it makes Clarkson expendable?
The problem with expendable is everybody's on the table from my perspective.
Yeah,
and yes, Clarkson would be more expendable as a guard, especially because I would expect D'Angelo Russell to play, 35 minutes, and then Lonzo Ball would probably start at 20 minutes and then, increase as a rookie does. So, from that perspective, especially if you can get good return for him, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Lakers have a glut of forwards and that they would probably need to consolidate before they dealt Jordan Clarkson, just because I think that should be a priority for them to consolidate their forwards. But yeah, absolutely. Jordan Clarkson should be on the trading block. Anybody should. I really like D'Angelo Russell. I really like Brandon Ingram. In fact, the D'Angelo Russell discussion is quite frankly very dumb around the league. The truth is that if I had to bet today, I would still bet that D'Angelo Russell, just odds on favorite to actually have a very good NBA career compared to the rest of the prospects. Now, we don't know how we don't know how Brandon Ingram is going to look next year. We don't know how Julius Randle is going to look this year. And for that fact, we don't even know what D'Angelo Russell will look like. But I'm just looking at, projections age-wise, they're per 36, just looking at a wide array of factors. D'Angelo Russell is performing very well. Now, yes, he's inconsistent at times. He's immature, but guess what? He's 21 and he's young. So that happens. But I think that the structure is in place, and especially if he gets a dynamic player like Lonzo Ball next to him, I think that they can do really good things together.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't have any qualms with that. I'm still not huge on D'Angelo Russell, but mostly because I just don't think he's a should I say great defender? I just wonder what their backcourt's going to be able to defend, because I know that Lonzo Ball, if he comes to the team, is not a great defender either, and they'll probably give up a lot of points. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, they could run a really fun, exciting offensive game, right?
And at least in terms of physical projections, Lonzo Ball is a person guarding shooting guards, actually, based off the scouting reports I've seen so far, actually projects pretty decently. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that the Lakers really don't have any good defenders. I mean, beyond Lonzo and D'Angelo Russell, we see it year time and time after again. Obviously, you need to have defenders at every position if you can do it. But the truth is that wings and big men are need to be better defenders, and you need your guards to have a good offense, bad defense guard than the flip for a center or a power forward, right? You're seeing that with Jahlil Okafor.
Yeah.
I think that, so you look at a player like Andre Robertson in OKC, right? He's really, really good at defense, but he is such a liability on the other end that you really can't play him. But a player like, let's say, DeAndre Jordan, who, while I consider, his athleticism and the lob dunks, I consider that an important and underrated part of when we evaluate offense. He's limited offensively, but he's so good defensively, there's no liability of him on the floor. But with guards, you can't afford being bad offensively. So I think that if you have D'Angelo Russell and Lonzo Ball, yes, there will be defensive deficiencies, but the onus in terms of team building should be on upgrading your forwards and your like wings and forwards and big men in that regard.
That's fair. That's all fair. That's all pretty good. I don't really know if I can argue with any of that, except for... Yeah, it's fine. I think you're right. Your guards definitely need to score. It would be right. An added bonus if they could defend as well. And I think at some point they're going to need that. They're going to need somebody at least to come off the bench and give them good defensive moments. Honestly, I think Lonzo Ball, because he's big. He's a big guard. He could probably improve significantly on that end of the court if he needs to. I don't know if he was asked to do that in college. I don't really watch college ball. So maybe the scouting report that's out on him now is that he didn't play defense, but maybe he just didn't need to,
And more importantly, and I think you alluded to it already, his physical attributes, mm-hmm. Also his instincts are very, very good.
You see that by his passing. Good. Yeah, if you can pass the ball that well, like say like Chris Paul, he's really good on defense too, because he understands the passes right. that need to be made. He understands the right. angles of the court, the geometry to get the ball from point A to point B. If you know about that stuff, you can jump the lane at any minute. It can you can create turnovers. All he needs to do is be long, which he is for a guard. You know, he could get better.
Yep. Yep. No, I'm very bullish about the D'Angelo Russell Lonzo Ball pairing. There's definitely a lot of problems with the Lakers roster, but I think those two are not those.
Yeah, and I think they have a better direction now with Rob Pelinka at the helm and Magic Johnson. Let me get your take on just a few other things. So I was messing with you before the lottery started. You seemed a little uptight. You didn't really want to go right, back and forth right. too much about this, but I was like, you know, I messed around. I was like, you know, the lottery's fixed. The Lakers are going to keep their pick. By the way, I don't actually think the lottery is fixed. That would be completely right. insane for the league to do this. It'd be gambling. If suppose they were gambling, and suppose they were fixing the, and this is what I've said for years, if they were fixing the draft, that would be the most elaborate, complex scheme ever. Do you know that last night, or whatever night it was, Tuesday night, when they did the lottery drawing, four times the Lakers came, or the, not the Lakers, the Celtics came up number one. They had to redraw it, like, and one time it got stuck. Right. The ball got stuck in the thing. There's no right. way you could possibly do that until the Lakers came up second, right? There's no way you could fake that.
Right.
It's totally a chance. It's totally random. I totally agree. But in saying that, I will also say that at no time did I ever think the Sixers were getting the Lakers pick. Just because it's the Lakers and the land of sunshine and the basketball gods will smile upon them. I hate that stupid term, the basketball gods. Anyway, but I never thought you weren't getting that pick for a second. What do you think about people that say the lottery is rigged?
I say in regards to any conspiracy event.
I'm losing you again, buddy. You're breaking up. I have to cut so much of this podcast out. Are you there?
Yeah. Sorry. Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you, but you're fuzzy.
What about now?
Yeah, good enough. Go ahead. What were you going to say about the best?
I'm saying just evaluate the cost and benefit of doing any sort of rigging of the lottery. If the benefit is that LA will be good and your ratings will go up, okay. If you get caught, what's the cost? The entire NBA as a business would collapse.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. That's exactly my point. And by the way, for people that say that the league is better, and this is what I was messing with you about, I was like, the league is totally better when the Lakers are good. There's more revenue and there's more focus on the league when the Lakers are, because it's such a big market. But you could say the same thing of the Knicks, the exact same thing of the Knicks. The league is probably better when the Knicks are good. And by the way, they dropped the spot.
The ratings have been fantastic this year, and they've not needed big markets. And by the way, San Francisco is a big market, and Golden State is doing just fine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so I don't think it's rigged, but it is fun to like, it's fun to imagine the possibility that, like, oh, this is, you know, because listen, the Celtics and the Lakers got 1 and 2. By the way, give me your opinion. I know you hate the Celtics. I'm not a huge fan either. What's your opinion of them getting the first overall pick?
Look, that deal, I mean, it was a ridiculous deal with the Nets that they made.
You think?
good for Danny Ainge. I mean, I love crapping on his draft record because I think that he's massively overrated in that regard. But the truth is, he's also probably one of the best deal makers in the NBA in terms of trades. And for a team to be in the conference finals, even though they're going to, you know, probably get swept, for a team to be in the conference finals and win the first pick in today's kind of NBA is just something that's like, you know, general manager Hall of Fame worthy. You know, it's just it's a remarkable thing. And so all credit to them, but I will root for them to fail.
Yeah, that's fair. By the way, we shouldn't give all the credit to Danny Ainge because, listen, Billy King was on the Brooklyn Nets when everyone saw this coming from the second he was hired. He was also enabled to do this. His owner went out and told him to do this. So yep. I blame Billy King, but I also blame Prokhorov. Anyway, right. But yeah, it's kind of sucks that to the riches goes the spoils. How's that go? To the
Yeah, I think that's a, I think that's a phrase. Yeah.
Yes.
Or the rich get richer.
The rich get richer. There you go. So in that respect, it kind of sucks. But listen, the last you told me, the Cavs were blowing out the Celtics by like 30 points in the first half. So they're still very far away. I will say also that, and you know, speaking of Ainge's track record drafting rookies, you're right. It's totally terrible. I think everyone's on board with this. Everyone is wise to his game now. We know he's not good at it. But I will say that Jaylen Brown in this playoffs has looked really good. And he might be better than I. What's that?
Yeah. His poise as a rookie in the playoffs has been impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good. I totally underrated him. I shouldn't say he came out of nowhere, but he's really come on in the playoffs. He might be a really good player sneakily that nobody expected. You know what I mean? Because, like, last year when he came, I didn't even think he was worthy of the draft, the third overall draft pick. Is that where they drafted third?
Right.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, what are they doing? This is a total reach. That might be a so we should give Ainge a little bit of credit here. He might have been on to something good. And if they get Fultz, who, as far as I know from anyone that's that has talked about the draft at all so far, Fultz is the guy. If you watch any of his highlights and stuff, he looks really freaking good. So there's the chance they could trade that pick and try and pick up Jimmy Butler or Paul George. I kind of think they might be a little bit foolish for doing it, but
I think it would actually be smart for them to keep Fultz. And I know this sounds crazy, but I think that they should explore trading Isaiah Thomas, just because Isaiah Thomas is having an amazing year. He's far overachieved from anything I thought he'd be able to do in this league, but I still don't think he can be the best player on a championship team. And in that case, not next year, but the year after, he's going to be unrestricted free agent. And I'm not sure you want to pay him $30 million a year, right, for 4 or 5 years.
Right.
So I think that, and especially because of how good LeBron is right now, you can afford to keep developing your rookies over the next 2-3 years and put yourself in a position to compete when LeBron is truly on his downswing and the Cavs are not as quite as dominant, right? And so I think it's actually more likely, strange enough, and I know this sounds a little crazy, but if you kind of break it down logically, I think it's more likely that they keep Fultz and trade Isaiah Thomas than them trading that number one pick for anybody like, you know, Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler is great. No, I mean, it's not a reflection on how I feel about Jimmy Butler. It's more of a reflection of how I look at their situation overall and how I look at the competitive landscape of the league right now.
You know, I would somewhat agree with that. I also think they should keep the pick and they should draft Fultz. But I somewhat disagree with the idea that, and I know a lot of people have come out and said they should just look at trading Isaiah Thomas. He's at his peak right now. They could get a lot for him. I sort of disagree with that because, and I do agree that you said he can't be the best player on a championship team. Yes, but he can definitely be your number two. And if Fultz progresses the way that everyone thinks he might, you have Fultz on a rookie deal. You're not going to give up anything to keep both of them. They can learn to work together. And from what everyone says, it looks like Boston is sort of committed to Isaiah Thomas and the fact that he can work off the ball. He could be a great shooting guard, a two guard who just, he doesn't need the ball in his hand. We know the guy can score from anywhere on the court. It could be a beautiful pairing, man. I mean, I think they're set up well either way.
Okay. But so young players don't win, right? Young teams don't win. Markelle Fultz is going to be really good, but in 5 years. And in 5 years, Isaiah Thomas will not be. And
right,
so but that's the calculus.
Right. That makes sense. But there's no reason to jump the gun right now. When you have overlapping pieces, you don't necessarily have to move away from Isaiah Thomas. Because as you said, in 5 years, Isaiah Thomas will not be as good. And Markelle Fultz projects to be that good. So you have one going out, but you have another one coming in. It's just in terms of stability and longevity of a playoff run, man. I think they're probably looking at that too. You know what I mean?
As a fan of a team with two untradeable contracts, if Isaiah Thomas falls off at all, that becomes an untradeable contract. So you are locked in. That's my point.
That's fair.
That's sort of where I'm coming from. Where if somebody really, really wants Isaiah right now and is willing to pay a fair price, like it might not even be a great, great deal, but at least a fair price. I think this is like advice. I don't think it's going to happen or anything like that, but I would actually advise that.
Oh, that's fair. I mean, I think honestly, because it's Ainge, he'll be open to trading anything. You know what I mean? He'll be open.
By the way, the truth is you have to be that calculating as an executive, especially as the league is getting smarter and general managers around the league are getting smarter.
Yeah.
Look how cold and calculated he was with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, and then later Rajon Rondo, and he's overwhelmingly won those two deals. So you have to kind of think like that. It has to be the organization first. I think Ainge has done a good job of that.
For sure. Speaking of GMs getting smarter, let me just say, as a Sixers fan, I am so happy that pick swap conveyed. I don't even care anything else that happened in the draft. They could have stayed at five as long as they got the Kings pick.
The poor Kings.
Tell me what you think about the Sixers landing at three. How do you feel about it?
I continue to be very interested in you know, everything that they're doing. I still like Brett Brown a lot.
I think that
a player like Jahlil Okafor, I don't care about the return. I just want him off my team. I look at him like the same way I look at Dwight Howard in terms of forget what they do on the court. It just seems off the court that they're not the right pieces to build around.
Actually,
unless you have.
I'm going to disagree with you there. From everything that Jahlil Okafor has done off the court, from the way he's handled himself outside of that first year, the way he's been a consummate teammate, like consummate pro as a teammate, he has not complained at all. He's done nothing but, and everyone on all the guys really like him, as far as I understand.
He's
a high quality kid. He's a good guy. He's not good on this team. It's not even that he's not a good basketball player. He still has a really high ceiling with his offensive potential, but his defense is such a negative, and his fit on this team is so profoundly bad. I totally agree. They need to move him. I don't think they'll start the season with him on this roster.
And the problem is, though, what's the market for a good, maybe not great, but a good offensive player and terrible defensive center?
As we saw at the trade deadline, there is no market for it. They gave up the way better asset in Nerlens Noel just to get a second-round pick, two second-round picks. Yeah,
yep.
There's no market for it.
But no, I overall from just about the Sixers, I think that you know, obviously we just hope that we can get, you know, 60 games of Joel Embiid, you know, rest him on all back to backs and stuff like that, and then hopefully we get Ben Simmons all year, and the number three pick, and you know, I can really see a lot of momentum, and they already had momentum this season, but I can see a lot of momentum generating.
Yeah, as a Sixers fan, I'm super excited for next season. Let me ask you this. I don't think I've ever asked you this, but as a Lakers fan, how do you feel about the Sixers franchise? Do you care at all?
Well, I mean, I care, but as an NBA fan, I'm very interested in what they've done. I fully endorsed the process as a concept. I thought the execution was the problem, and I think that just the way they handled the public side of it was the reason why it ended the way it did. But as a team building attempt, I still find it very fascinating, and the fruits of it is still, you know, still ongoing.
For sure. But I mean, how do you feel about the Sixers franchise as a Lakers fan? Do you feel any sort of like hate towards them from past rivalries, or does it not even, because I know for me or any Sixers fan, we hate the Lakers. We hate the Lakers. And mostly because of 2001, because none of us were really, I wasn't old enough to really pay attention in 1982 when they won their last championship. And I don't remember the rivalry there.
Take this with the pettiness of which it's intended.
Go for it.
You may think about us, but we don't think about you.
I know, and that's what kills me. But listen, you guys would have had the only perfect postseason in NBA history, if not for Allen Iverson and the Sixers in 2001.
It's perfect that the one loss they had was so memorable because of the Ty Lue step over thing. It is so memorable. Maybe the Warriors go 16-0. So
yeah, we'll see. Good luck to them. Anyway, buddy, thank you so much again for coming on. Plug your stuff one more time and we'll get out of here.
Yes. Just follow me on Twitter @DamanR, DamanR. And you will find all my stuff there. I really appreciate it, Joe.
Yeah, super, man. Thanks, Dominic, again, for coming on. And I'll talk to you again soon. Probably, I don't know, maybe around draft time or something, just after. We should talk about what the Lakers and Sixers did.
Sounds good.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon. Have a good night. Anyway, that's going to do it for me. I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.